Good morning.
You see? Let's get back.
Good morning. It is so unusual to walk into a room where everyone gets quiet right away. This is great, especially amongst all these women. So, good morning. My name is Megan Leaders. I am the Chief Marketing Officer at Silicon Labs. For those of you, for those of you who may not know Silicon Labs but may know the buildings, they have prime real estate right at, on Cesar Chavez. Yes, a lot of shaking your head. And I'm sure, like a lot of us, we might see these buildings and you wonder, what in the world? What happens in there? I will quickly tell you, Silicon Labs is a company that is really in the business of connecting the world and making the world a bit smarter. And we do that through building semiconductor chips that are in products that I guarantee are in most of your homes. So we are in 80% of flat screen TVs. If you drive a Tesla, we have over 50 chips in those Teslas. If you have Philips light bulbs in your house that you're connecting your apps to, we help to build those Philips light bulbs. So we are in the business of really providing a more connected environment and really advancing the world through connected devices, through software and semiconductors. So another part of Silicon Labs is that we love to work with the community. And being a proud sponsor of the Texas Women's Conference is just one of the few things that we do. And we are so honored to be here and really helping to evangelize and advance the conversation with women like we have today. So it is great to see so many advocates and women from around the state bringing together their diverse and valuable perspectives. Today, I am honored to MC the Mind the Gap, this very popular topic of negotiating your salary. And I will introduce our moderator for the session, Michelle Duguid. She is a management professor at Cornell University. She is well-authored. She's been in Forbes, The Economist, published in major science and psychology journals. And please join me in welcoming Michelle to the stage along with our panelists.
Thank you so much. I think we're all really, really passionate about this topic. So first, before I go into my little spiel, it would be great if we could also get to know the panel.
Sure. I'm Amy Gallo. I'm a contributing editor at Harvard Business Review and the author of the HBR Guide to Dealing with Conflict. So I come to this topic with a difficult conversations framework. I'm also the co-host of the of HBR's Women at Work podcast, which just launched its fourth season. Our first episode of the season, which you can download wherever you download your podcasts, was all about salary transparency, so very relevant for today's conversation.
Hi, guys. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Meg Murphy, and I'm the CMO at IBM Systems, and I have literally been at companies where I've been employee number 37, or now I'm at a company where we've got more than 300,000 employees. So I hope to share with you kind of the manager's perspective at a variety of company sizes and give you really practical information that you can take home and use.
Hi, everyone. I'm Linda Rayner. I'm a career strategist, and I work with corporate professionals who want to advance their careers. And I also talk on the topic of salary negotiation, specifically for people who want to get new jobs, how to negotiate their salary at the job offer stage. So hopefully I'll be able to share that with you today.
So I just wanted to spend a couple minutes talking about just setting up the topic. I'm really passionate about this topic. And it's really timely for me. Just last week, which I thought was like the best news that I could hear, I got an email from a woman who I had done a session with her organization like a year ago. And we did strategies and actually just encouragement to get out there and negotiate. And she negotiated an extra $45K of comp.
Oh, that's nice. Great.
So it is like thinking about these things and actually doing it makes a difference. So I'm just gonna talk about three quick tips and then we are gonna jump in with this amazing panel. I would say number one, do your homework. Preparation is incredibly important. Frankly, research shows that it is the number one thing when it comes to success negotiation. You know, you often talk to people and they think it's, oh, people are charismatic, outgoing. No, preparation is the number one thing, which means getting benchmark data. And now more than ever, it's definitely easier to do now. Tap into your networks. find out what people are doing. Also, you know, people might be a little afraid or shy about sharing. Ask them for a range so they don't have to pinpoint a number. It gives them a little more ease to be transparent, to share. And often, I got an email from a colleague of mine about rates to do different talks and so on, and she had a number of us asking so she could get a variety of data points, but it was all linen, which I emailed her immediately and said, you actually need to also get some data points for some men because we know we're at the lower end of the spectrum. So you need to reach out to some male colleagues as well to see where they're at so you have a really representative range. The second thing I would say, in addition to doing your homework, don't forget about your partner. And notice I didn't say competitor or competition. Your partner, the person across the table from you. Thinking about their interests, their goals, their vision, trying to meld those things together. Let me give you a quick example. So I'm a university professor, so I work. My boss is my dean. And my previous institution before I was recruited back to Cornell, my dean was a cost accountant. That was his research. And he was, God bless him, very tight with the purse strings, gave out a lot of no's for different initiatives, and we've all gone trying to get resources for different things. And part of the issue why he gave out a lot of no's to some of my colleagues and was they weren't thinking about the partner. So when I went in and negotiated with him, I would say basically two words, Cornell and Wharton. Those words were like open and sesame. His goal was to keep up with our sister institutions, our sister universities. And so when I went in, actually I was pitching a women in leadership class for our MBAs, and I said, I've reached out, and Wharton Cornell, they have these great programs, these great classes. I know this is your goal, and I really think this would be useful, right? Had I gone in there and said, I think this is great, I'd love to teach this class, it would be seen completely differently. He gave me even more money than I asked for, right? Thinking about other people's goals. We know from research, people like people who work with them for a common goal, right? You can imagine someone working with you for a common goal. We love those people, and it's hard to say no to people we like. And a part B of that is that women, not surprisingly, we actually like asking for things when it comes to other people, just not for ourselves. So even just the mindset of working with someone, even the person across the table from you, your partner, that also makes it easier for you even to ask. And my last thing, number three, which is really important. You know, often when we think about negotiations, we think about getting to yes. There's even a book, great book called Getting to Yes. But I want you to also think about sometimes you gotta negotiate no. Research shows that women, much more than men, are asked to do extra things. Actually, research, we call it the office housework. And office housework includes those things that are like actual housework, like the planning the parties, scheduling the meetings, coordinating schedules. But it's also being on all those committees that suck up your time and meetings. It's also asking, you know, you're the mentor for all the women who are coming in, right? So absolutely, you say yes to some of those things, especially things that are near and dear to your heart. But we all know women are promoted because of proven performance on competencies that matter to the bottom line. Men, it's on their potential. So if it's proven, you actually need to do those things. You need to spend your time doing things that are important to the bottom line, right? And when I say, you will get some credit for doing these extra things, but you need to spend your time doing things that are brought up first in those evaluation meetings. The other things, those housework, they'll come up later on in the conversation. But she also does X, Y, and Z. But you want to spend a lot of your time on those things that come up first in those meetings. So sometimes you need to also negotiate no. Okay, with that, we're going to get to our amazing panel. So, my first question, Amy, let's start with you since you're so close to me. So, how do you mentally prepare for what you anticipate will be a difficult conversation? Often that's one of the things that women fear most. Like, this is just hard. Rejection, you know, hurting a relationship. How do you prepare for that?
Yeah, and this is, no matter what the difficult conversation is going to be, but especially true if you're negotiating a raise or a new salary, we are our own worst enemies often, and we'll just say, I'm not good at negotiating, this is not going to go well, it's very unlikely that they'll give me what I want. You know, we might even get into the gendered conversation. Women don't typically negotiate. We tell ourselves all those myths that we've been told women aren't good at negotiating. So the first thing is to banish all of those negative thoughts, because when you go into conversation thinking this is not going to go well, guess what? It's not going to go well, right? So you have to think about, how can I approach this conversation in a way that is positive and curious, and to what Michelle said, collaborative. Right? How do I anticipate this not as an adversary, but as me and this other person both want something? We want me to succeed here. We want the team to succeed. We want this job opportunity to work out. Right? We're in it together to get what we need. I think that's the really most important thing. The other is to know, is as Michelle said, you want to be as prepared as possible, and that means having as much information as you can gather. The information asymmetry in a salary negotiation is intense. They have much more information, particularly an initial salary. They have much more information than you do. And so you need to gather as much information as you can. And that might include talking to people who already work at the company. That might be asking, if you're negotiating for a raise, asking HR, what are the typical salary bands, right? Getting all the data you can. Go to Glassdoor, go to salary.com, right? Find out as much information as you can, and be willing to ask people. Go, you know, call people that you are connected with on LinkedIn and say, you don't have to say, hey, what do they pay you there, right? You can say, this is a job I'm going up for. What do you think the typical salary for that would be, right? And the more specific, you know, Glassdoor, salary.com, all those are useful, but they're often very general. So the more specific you can get to the industry, the specific job title, and even the company, the much more powerful you'll be in that conversation. And that not only do you have more information so you can negotiate better, but it also helps calm that sense. Part of the reason these conversations are so anxiety provoking is because we don't have information. And the person we're negotiating with typically has all the information they need, right? So we really need to get as much information as possible, go in with a positive, curious attitude, and just remind yourself, this is a normal thing. People do this all the time.
Hey, I wanted to weigh in because I think the hardest thing is part of your preparation needs to be saying the words. You need to practice saying the words and role play. I think my kids grew up with thinking their mom was a little crazy because I did a lot of role playing in the bathroom. And so I progressed from role playing with myself to find a colleague or find a mentor or find a manager, preferably maybe even a male manager. Say the words, have the words come back at you, and role play when you ask for your raise, when you make your pitch, when you ask for your promotion. Be prepared for some of the things that come back at you. So more than anything, practice. Get comfortable with the words.
Yeah. That's great advice.
Yeah. So, Linda, how do you actually structure discussions around the actual structure? Once you've role-played, you've, you know, gathered your data, how do you structure those conversations?
So in terms of, let's say you're negotiating a new job offer, I would say there's a few key steps that you want to follow. The first one is you want to come across as very grateful that they're offering you the job, obviously. I think some people think that they have to come across sort of like a little stiff, a little bit like, no, you know, I know what I deserve. You don't want to necessarily come off too difficult looking or sounding, especially when you're at the job offer stage, because you really want to show, I'm excited. I'm so excited that you offered me this opportunity. Thank you so much. I'm really grateful. You know, so you're throwing that in there at the beginning to show that you're excited and that you have that intention to take on the job. Then what you're going to do is you're going to remind them of your value. So reminding them of your value means that you have to reflect on what went on, let's say, in the interview stages. So during the interview discussions with the employer, what did you guys talk about? What did you say to them that let them know that you are the right fit for the job? So if it's certain skill sets that you have, if it's certain types of experiences, certain achievements that you have that you know that this job is really requiring, you want to be specific about that. So you're going to say something along the lines of, as we discussed in our interviews, I know that I have ABC skills that will be applicable for this role, and I know this is something that you're really looking for, and I'm looking forward to contributing my experience and my knowledge to this position. So you're gonna remind them of your value, you're listing those things out, and then the next thing that you're gonna do is you're gonna straight up ask. You're gonna, not necessarily ask, you're going to gently suggest. So you'll say, one thing that I'd like to discuss at this point, however, is if we could talk further about the compensation. And then you're going to actually say what you want. So a lot of people, what happens is they just kind of leave it sort of open-ended, like, I'd like to talk further about the compensation. But at this point, the ball is in your court. You want to be clear on what it is that you're looking for and what your value is. So you want to tell them, based, as I discussed earlier, based on ABC skills that I have and experience that I have that I can bring to this position, this is how much I'm expecting for this next position that I'll be taking on. And give a number rather than a range, because I find that a range, they tend to go for the lower end of the range. So they're like, oh, you want between this and this? Okay, we'll just give her the lower end. And I say, go for what you want. Now, obviously, you have to do your research, as has been discussed. You definitely need to know what number that is, but be clear on that. Can we take questions?
I think we're taking questions at the end.
At the end, if that's okay.
Oh, is that a pre-offer or post-offer conversation?
This is, okay, so when they're offering you the job, I would say, they've given you the number, they've told you what they want to offer you, then you're going back. Because you'll know you'll know whether you like that offer or not. You don't really want to negotiate well before you know what the number is, because then what if they're going to give you even more than what you're asking for? So, yeah, and then the final, I'll just end this quickly, and then the final part is to thank them again and say, you know, I'm really looking forward. I cannot wait to accept the offer. If we can just, you know, deal with this little minor issue, then I can't wait to start, kind of thing. So those are the four steps.
And I think the other thing in that conversation, what I know from difficult conversations is that we often think if we spread our discomfort over like thousands of words, it'll somehow be less uncomfortable, which is not true, right? You just end up saying things that sound silly. And
agreed.
So really to both of your points, like, be very succinct, practice what you're going to say, know what you're going to say, and then embrace the silence.
And right? Smile. And smile. It freaks them out, actually.
So I definitely want to say, so when I say ask for a range, it was in your before you even get into the meeting, and in terms of asking, doing your research. But when you are in the meeting, I agree, you don't want to give them a range. That's your upfront, and then the range, forget that. Once you have your number, then you ask for what you want.
I think if you're the interviewee and you've got the job offer, you don't realize the power you have in that moment. It's your best opportunity to set your compensation and set your value when you're entering the company. So make the most of that. From the manager's perspective, that role could have been open for months. They may have reviewed hundreds of applicants, interviewed dozens. The last thing they really want you to do is to walk out the door. So use that power.
And it's very, very rare that a job offer gets rescinded because of a salary negotiation.
That's
please
right.
Don't freak yourself out that you're going to somehow lose the opportunity if you ask for too much. That's very rare.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say there is a budget for the negotiation piece. You have to know that there is always that budget. And I find a lot of women, in my experience, they just accept the offer that they get because they don't realize that actually there's a budget for additional money that can be offered to you.
I think I'd like to offer that when you're trying to determine your value and you're out there and you're looking at ranges, pick what you really think your number is and then be bold enough to add 20%. If you're a white woman, you got to add 20%. If you're a woman of color, then you have to really think about adding a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you say more about why that is?
Well, we have the inequality in our pay. I think some of you are probably very familiar with Equal Pay Day. And I think, you know, that's for women. I think white women, it might be. It's a whole year plus a few months into the next year to equal the same amount of pay that a white man will generate. Later in the year, it might be like November if you're a Latina. You know, so you can Google the dates, but the ranges that are being thrown out at you may already be tampered down because you are a woman. So just be aware of that. And if it feels really uncomfortable, the amount you're asking for, it's probably the right amount.
So from a manager's perspective, Meg, how would you structure conversations around pay and
so on? Right. Well, I love your notion of preparation. And my advice would be preparation starts with a really critical self-assessment of, let's say you're already in the company. Mm-hmm. A critical self-assessment to how is your performance seen? What is the perception that your manager has of you? What is the perception that stakeholders or your team have of you? Be brave enough.
Oh, little mood lighting.
That's right. Be brave enough to ask
Everyone
people.
Everyone put their flashlights on.
Maybe send out some surveys. So what you're doing there is you're really kind of assessing your own brand, which is a part of your story. Document the business impact, the business value delivered to your manager and your company. So kind of build your business case. Make it easy on your manager. They may actually not be the decision maker. And to your point, there is a budget often for compensation. Most companies have a season where they're looking at compensation. So let's say that if that's mid-year, then you really need to start your work in January in terms of assessing your brand, assessing your performance, building your network, thinking about the points that you want to make. You know, I actually admire people who come in and maybe they've even told me in advance that they want to talk compensation, so it's not cold. You know, and they have like maybe even a memo format, because maybe if I'm not the decision maker, they've made it easy for me to build a case to my supervisor that I might have to go to for the extra budget. So start with really assessing your value to the company. Be prepared. Follow the schedule in terms of when you time some of these things out, and then make it easy on your manager.
Yeah. I also think that it can be helpful to have a pre-conversation, which is you set up a meeting and you ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And that's the again, because the information asymmetry, especially when you're asking for a raise, is, you know, what would make me eligible for a raise? What are the salary bands? Where do I stand currently in the salary bands? You are allowed to ask all of those questions, right? And that gives you more information. So when you go back to have the structured conversation with your request, then you have more information. Right. Have you had
Absolutely.
People do that with you?
I have, and I've actually tried it myself, you know, and I think the other part of preparation is prepare for the no. It's most likely the answer you're going to get. So what does that mean for you in terms of how you respond in the moment, and then how do you want to respond in the future? Do you want to ask for a comeback, for reevaluation? So this is why I think role-playing and figuring out all those scenarios is really healthy, and it will give you the confidence to go in and have the tough conversation.
Yeah, which is my next question. So what happens if you do hear a no? Mm-hmm. What then?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm in a position to say no, not to salaries a lot, but I get pitched a lot for HBR. And I would say 90% of the time when someone comes back and says, no, this piece really should be in HBR, it is a man. And I think oftentimes women just take no because they're like, okay, yeah, like that seems fair. They said no. But really, especially in a salary negotiation, it is important to go back. It's important to ask questions. Why is that a no? What would make this an answer different, right? What other information do we all need to get to a yes, right? Just sort of push a little bit to find out why. Don't just take the no as the no. And sometimes a no is a firm no, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's the first step in a negotiation, and that's how you should see it. I got a no here. Doesn't mean I did it wrong. Doesn't mean I'm never going to get a yes. But let me go back in, find out what additional information they need, what additional information I can provide, and then go from there. What else would you add to that?
Well, I would start with understanding why you're getting the no. And this goes back to my comments around self-assessment. Are you too new in the role? Are you a recent hire? Have you recently taken on a promotion and you're just getting started? Have you been in the role long enough to deliver what I love someone else called undeniable and well-documented value? So find out why you got the no. And then if you believe you have really well-documented the value to your manager, to your company, then the next thing I'd negotiate is, hey, this is really important to me, and I want us to agree on the criteria and the timing when we reevaluate this. Maybe in your company that might be 90 days. Maybe that has to be the next payroll cycle. But have that conversation. And then you can go and think about it. And if you feel like maybe in the moment you didn't agree or didn't push hard enough, then ask for a follow-up conversation.
Yeah, to that point, I would say, you know, you really do want to assess and ask yourself, what did I say that could have made this conversation go towards that no direction? Because there are things where maybe you didn't bring up that could have actually helped you further with the raise in the salary. So the biggest thing I'd say before this entire, I mean, preparation, I think this is the theme of this discussion, but almost like 6 months, a year before, you need to already have that document laid out for yourself, that little journal where you're telling yourself, okay, this is what I've done, this is what I achieved, this is how much money it brought or saved for the company. You really need to be clear on that, and that's what's going to really help you in that conversation. You just want to have those key points laid out rather than just thinking about the amount that you deserve. Yes, you deserve it, but you need to have your evidence ready to prove.
And I'm actually going to say something that's a little bit controversial. I recently discovered that a colleague and friend of mine, he is paid almost twice as much as anyone else. And one of the reasons that is because he has all these outside offers. So one of the, when you get a no, sometimes if you're constantly hearing no, 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 sometimes you may need to, you want to be treated fairly and equitably. And also, by looking, and women don't do this at all, like, oh, I'm looking at other offers, it's too strategic. Men do it all the time. And when you can say, well, actually, you know, there's this, or everyone loves someone that other people love as well.
Yeah.
That is a way to definitely get you to where you need to be.
It definitely establishes your market value. The trick with an outside offer is you have to be prepared to
absolutely
take it. Right? Because there's no, like, I have this outside offer, right? Can I please get a raise? And they're like, oh, great, good luck. That sounds like a great opportunity for you, right? Like, you have to be really careful with the outside offer.
Oh, no, you should absolutely be willing to go.
And there's research that shows that we expect women to be more loyal to organizations. So sometimes women are penalized for using an outside offer. So you have to be clear that you want to stay. You say, you know, I was interviewing for jobs because this opportunity seemed interesting. I'd much rather stay here, right? This is not a threat. This is, I'd much rather stay here. How can we make that possible? Right, and you really have to be careful with the outside offer. But it does show you your market value. And sometimes you don't even use it, but you now know what you're worth. So you get that information. I will also say just about knowing that someone at the organization makes more than you, I encourage people as much as possible to talk about what they make with their colleagues. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is uncomfortable.
And it is...
You really, the more information you have, the better. And that can be an uncomfortable conversation. In some organizations, they don't allow those conversations, which is in some states illegal. But having that information is incredibly helpful. Not that you're going to go in and say, John over here is making twice as much as me. I need to make as much.
That's what you shouldn't say.
Exactly.
Don't.
But now you know what someone at your level makes, so you can make a better argument. The other thing I would say on that, if it is John, I would say, you know, we're all interested in working in a place that pays people fairly, right? I think appealing to someone's sense of fairness is an incredibly good tactic, especially for a woman in a salary negotiation. And I often use that if I'm negotiating with a client. I'll say, we'll talk about fees, and I'll say, I'm most interested in being paid fairly, so I just want to know that I'm being paid the same that you're paying men who are doing the same work. Mm-hmm. And that works incredibly well, because you're telling people, this is just pay me fairly, not this is this number that I need, which is also incredibly effective, but appealing to their sense of equality.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to follow up on that for you. So, you know, I think that people sometimes can come up with all different reasons why, oh yeah, the reason I'm paying John more is because he brings X, Y, and Z and all those things that you know are not applicable at all. How do you follow up?
Well, and that's why you don't want to do what you don't want to say, I know what John makes, I now have to make that, right? Because you don't want to get into a comparison. Yeah. Most of us do work where it's not quantifiable that our value is that much better than our colleagues or that much worse than our colleagues. So you're going to get into, there's going to be all this gray area. So instead, you want to use that number as an anchor for you of what you want, rather than naming the salary of other people. ideally you're not getting into that discussion of who provides more value.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that when your manager is giving reasons why there might be differences, that they feel authentic and fact-based. Because if they don't, then that's time for you to reevaluate working for that manager, working on that team, maybe even working on that company. And if you're in a big enough company, maybe then you go look for an opportunity elsewhere in the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna say when you were talking about job offers, you do have to be prepared to take it. And you know what? Part of it could be strategic in that you do take that other job offer. And because they valued so much at your old job, it could be that a year, 2 years down the road, they realize what they missed out on. And then they call you back and you're able to bump up even further. So that is a tactic that certain professionals use to make sure that they get paid fairly. Because to be honest, if you stay at the same company, it is a lot harder to increase your salary at the rate that everyone else is getting their increases if you're not doing the work of figuring out what your value is and if you're potentially not taking other job offers. You really have to love your job to stay in it and not get paid what you're worth. There are times where you do just have to leave and then maybe you come back or you find something even better.
So I'm going to build up on some of the things that you were saying, Linda. But, you know, we talked about penalties, like women, it has, you know, so the big fear is that we're going to get penalized for negotiating. And unfortunately, there is some research that shows
we
do get penalized,
absolutely.
Right? So what are some of the things in terms of demeanor that you would say that women should, what should they do in order to avoid that penalty?
So when you say penalty, what do you mean exactly? I just want to make sure that's
clear. So, you know, there's research that said, you know, if women and men act exactly the same in the same way,
unexpected.
That men are going to be seen, or they're going to get what they want, okay. And they're going to be seen as likable. It's not going to impact their likability. Women, on the other hand, they may get what they want, but people are going to see them as being greedy. People are going to see them as being exactly. And so that's the backlash is what they call it. So what are some of the things?
So that's a great question. I think when it comes to demeanor, and this was discussed earlier on as well, it's really more about focusing on the collective and not so much on me, me, me. This is what I want. This is what I deserve. This is what I can do for you. I mean, that is definitely one part of it. You need to establish your value. But then the other part of it is to let them know how that can help the company, how that can help make this person's job potentially easier. Listen, I'm helping you to do this because that will help you achieve your goals of whatever it is that you want to achieve. So focusing on the other person and making it collaborative in that sense, I think that's the demeanor to go. If you're only focused on yourself and you're only focused on what you want, it can potentially turn them off.
So I'll share something. It was a little provocative, but I actually use these words with my manager, who I have incredible respect for. And I said, I'm going to discuss compensation, and research shows that you're going to like me a little less when I do. And this will be an adventure for both of us.
Yeah.
And then I just paused there and smiled, and he was on WebEx, and he was like, you know, but it kind of broke the ice, you know, and it was like, hey, research shows you're going to have a reaction to this and it's okay, you know.
That's called priming, by the way.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
You prime people to know what their biases will be, so which makes them hopefully overcome them, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the classic example of, Sheryl Sandberg talks about this, I think, in her book, but is that she, when she went in to negotiate her salary with Mark Zuckerberg, she said, you need me to be a good negotiator. You hired me for this role because you need a good negotiator in this role. I'm now going to show you how good I am by negotiating my salary.
I love that.
Right.
I love that.
If you think about it, exhausting mental gymnastics to have to do. Like, I'm just showing you how good this is good for you. But if we all negotiate in that way, men and women, we would probably get better results because we are focused on the collective rather than turning the negotiation into a fight or to being adversaries. You're making it about the collective because that's ultimately what we're there for, is to help an organization, of course, make money, of course, further our careers, but ultimately we're part of a collaborative trying to achieve goals.
Right, and who wouldn't want somebody who's informed, confident, speaks up, knows their value, knows the value that, who wouldn't want a fighter on their team in this incredibly competitive, fast-paced environment that we all work in?
Yeah, I'm gonna try your trick, though.
Yeah.
I like that.
actually, I don't wanna take credit because they weren't actually my words, but I at least was gutsy enough to use them. There's a great resource out there called She Negotiates, either .com or .org, and you can also Google just scripts for women asking for a raise, and you're gonna find tons of people just like you have shared words that work for them, and find the ones that work for you.
Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna go down the line here, start with Linda. So common mistakes, what are some common mistakes that women make that we should avoid?
Common mistakes, I think, trying to think. I think one mistake that, I mean, it's an obvious one, is just not having that, I mean, when we go back to the topic of value, not having your arguments laid out clearly in terms of knowing exactly why you deserve the amount that you're asking for. You have to be able to prove it. Just saying that, I just feel like I deserve this much, I just want more, isn't enough. You know, you really have to be clear. So when we're talking about achievements, for example, you have to say, what did you do? How did it impact the team or the company? What was the quantifiable impact, if you could come up with that? If it was, you know, cost savings of how much? If it was time savings, more efficient time, whatever spent. And so you have to think of it that way, and then use that as your leverage to be able to discuss what you want in terms of salary. So I think the mistake is just that you're just not going in with your arguments laid out clearly. That's definitely the biggest one, in my opinion.
I think sometimes it's being comfortable saying, I did this, I led this. If you listen to men, they use a lot of I. It's personally sometimes a turnoff for me, but I think as women, we tend to speak in terms of we or us or our. It's just kind of maybe the way we're brought up. But I think it's time for us to be brave enough to say, I did do this, and I have researched this, and I have added that value, and that's another set of words that we need to get comfortable with. And that's not self-promoting. If it's actual performance, it's communication and transparency. It's not self-promotion.
I see a lot of women negotiate against themselves, so they'll do the prep where they think, okay, this is an argument that I shouldn't get this. This is, you know, this is what they might say, and then they actually say those things in the conversation. They'll say, well, I can understand you would not want this because of blah blah, yeah. Right? And it's because you're thinking through, you have thought through all those arguments. Don't negotiate for them. Right? Negotiate for yourself. They may bring up things that you should be prepared to answer, but in the conversation, stay focused on you and what you need. Don't get so focused on their perspective that you start negotiation.
Oh, I just want to pile in, because I just love what you said. It's so unexpected for a woman to negotiate that you're actually feeding them their lines.
Yes.
If you make your point and then just embrace the uncomfortableness of that silence,
yeah.
They're actually going to look at you for a while as they think of what they should say.
Mm-hmm.
And just power through it.
Yeah. Yeah, you really have to just sit there, you know, pleasant smile. I won't say smile, because I think, but pleasant look on your face, and just wait, right? Because they have a job to do, right? This isn't all on you. A hiring manager's job is to determine salary, is to pay people fairly, and to pay them in a way that makes them want to stay, that makes them want to come to the organization. So this is not all on you. Right? This is as much their work to do as it is yours. And that's important to keep in mind, because you go in thinking, this is a huge thing I have to do. I'm nervous about it. I'm worried. But no, this is a normal conversation that is supposed to happen. And everyone has a role to play in it.
Mm-hmm. So often nowadays, people come to me and they say, you know, I'm thinking about, I just got this new job offer, and they say absolutely upfront, no one negotiates. There's no room for negotiations. Is that actually a thing, or is there always room to negotiate?
So this is the thing, is that they're actually, sometimes when they're really clear on that, sometimes they really won't go further than that. And I've seen it happen where, you know, we think, well, when I'm working with a client, I'm thinking, well, even though they said that, well, you know, we want to, let's just see. And the further you probe, it really isn't a big no, and it's kind of like take it or leave it. And that also is potentially because they're at a point in their hiring where they've only gone through a few people, and so they still have that energy to interview more people. And if they think you're the one, but then you're wavering and you're going back and forth and you're saying that you want more and they know what their budget is, there's the potential that they might just be willing to move on. It also depends on how far along this company has been hiring for this job. You want to, ideally, the best situation is that you're coming in at a time where they've already interviewed so many people, they've realized and really clearly they know that you are the one that they want. They're worn down from all the interviewing that they've had to do, and now you got them when they're kind of weak. And, you know, you're able to get in there. Yeah. That's the ideal. So it can happen. It is possible.
And some companies are doing it now. Some innovative companies are doing it now as a way to encourage gender equity in pay. Because they know, not that women don't negotiate, because those myths have been disproven. It's that women don't get rewarded for negotiating. So instead of, you know, having men come in getting rewarded for negotiating and women not getting rewarded for negotiation, they just say there's no negotiation, right? We're focused on fair pay. So sometimes it's just a policy. It's important. I would not take the hiring manager's statement at face value, though. I would research that. Right?
It's got to be your number. You know, if it's not a number you're going to feel motivated and happy and proud of, then negotiate, because you have nothing to lose. You have nothing to lose. And what you will save yourself is years of wondering, wow, what if I'd pushed harder?
Yeah. Well, and that salary determines everything in the future.
Yeah. So like until you're ready to leave, right?
Right. And then in some cases, it also determines your next salary at another company.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful about that, especially for your first job. You have to negotiate hard.
Yeah. I mean, I do this exercise where if someone asks for an extra $7,600 and 1% extra in terms of annual bonus, just $7,600 and 1% extra, which we're not gonna damage your relationship for that. It takes 47 years. That person who didn't ask for that $7,600 and 1% extra, it takes 47 years to equal the wealth of the person who did by age 65 if they both started off at age 30. It follows you, it is, and then what do they ask you potentially? It depends on the state you're in.
Yeah.
How much did you make at your next job? So it is important to have this information.
We're up to 17 states that make that question illegal, though. So that's great.
So,
and it's always your option to answer that question. Yes. And you know, if you've been a top salesperson, you know, there was a point in my career where I just sent them my W-2. but there are other points in my career where I didn't want to talk about it. So it's your personal choice whether you share that information. You know, because what you can't answer with is, I'm talking about the value of this job and me as the candidate for your company right now. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So how is it okay? So we talked about hard numbers. Are there other things, if there is a hard number that they can't move on, or are there other things that women can negotiate for to make themselves feel more whole?
And the mistake we make is we often think we can't negotiate for several things.
Mm-hmm.
More
vacation.
More vacation. You know, maybe it's a, you know, it could be subsidized parking. Mm-hmm. It could be education benefits.
Flexibility.
It could be a bonus pay.
Travel.
A hiring bonus. So figure out the mix of things, or flexibility in your work location. You know, figure out the things that are really important to you. It's not just pay, and kind of have that portfolio in mind.
Yeah, and you can negotiate all those things at once. That is part of the process.
Actually, as a manager, I prefer that. There has been a moment in several negotiations where I felt like I had really done the best I could for the candidate, and we had agreed, and then the candidate kind of came back.
Yeah.
And over time, that relationship, it made me rethink whether this candidate was going to be the right person for me and the team. So I actually prefer, as a manager, for you to lay it all out there.
I agree. I think you want to be very clear. You want to know what it is that you want. And when it's the whole idea of wavering. Oh, wait, hold on. There's this other thing that I wanted later on in the process.
Yeah, it makes you look ill-prepared.
Exactly. And that sets the tone for how they're going to see you when you join the company. And, you know, that sets up the relationship as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So often we hear, and it has been disproven in many cases, but still anecdotally, that women don't ask, right? So what are these pervasive reasons that we see that women aren't asking as much as their male counterparts? Or if they do ask, they're not asking for as much as their male counterparts.
I'm just curious, is there, how many people have asked that negotiated a salary here?
Good for you.
Yay!
Good for you.
So it's a lot of you, right? So there is, you know, research that shows that that myth is not true, that in fact, women do ask, they just don't get, right? That they don't actually get what they're asking for. So I would get that myth out of our head, because I think that sort of perpetuates this idea that we won't ask, and perpetuates the penalty we suffer when we do. Right. But the reasons, and actually Joan Williams, who is a wonderful researcher, she's out at UC Hastings in California, she wrote an article that the title was, Women Don't Negotiate Because They're Not Idiots. And her point was about this penalty. So in some ways, women really have to work very hard to be likable. And often, there's a lot of research that shows oftentimes our likability and our competency can be at odds. And so part of the reason is we're afraid it's going to damage relationships. And that's where remembering that this is a normal conversation that everyone has, right, this is not going to damage relationships. This is a normal course of doing business, asking for raises. If you'd make some of the mistakes we talked about, it could potentially damage relationships. But it's a typical conversation that happens. Yeah. What do you see?
Well, I think in a perfect world, it would always be seen as a normal conversation, but I think there's a lot of truth to that uncomfortableness and that penalty. And I think now the competition for talent is fierce. And if you know your value, and then first look at your manager relationship. Like I said, if you're in a big enough company, maybe it's time to switch teams. If that doesn't work and having these conversations, you start to feel like you're being penalized, then start looking around and giving yourself options.
Right, exactly. I think it comes down to what we tell ourselves. I mean, at the end of the day, it's whether we truly, even though we know our value, sort of, but do we really believe that that's what we are capable of, or that we deserve more? It's really about what you feel within, because I think that comes out in those conversations. It's if you're, you know, half in, half out, you're like, I really want more, and you're going to try to go for it, and you're going to do it, but part of you feels that self-doubt, I feel like that energy does transfer over to the other side, and they can feel that bit of doubt in you. So that causes them to maybe not give you as much, even though you are making that effort, you are asking. So it really is going to be about you owning it. You know that what you're worth, and as was said, look around so that you feel safe, that if this isn't the place for you, you can move on and you can make what you want to make.
And can I give everyone a piece of homework? Can you also go and find one man in your life? It can be your husband, it can be your manager, it can be a colleague, it can be your teenage son, and tell them about this bias, right? Tell them that women tend to get penalized more for negotiating. Because if instead of taking it on ourselves to fix this, let's help the men in our lives change the bias as well, right? You didn't know you were going to get homework.
I'm actually going to open up for questions because I know people are raring to go. All right.
I've got a mic.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I did. Start here.
So one of the things that stands out to me as what the panel was discussing is biases. And in negotiations, that just doesn't come up with the money. So for my own personal lived experience, it's been about my intersections. So as a Black woman, as a large fat woman, as someone who's from an urban area, quote unquote, who doesn't code switch when she talks, things of these natures. So I'm asking, and I've seen that being penalized. So I talk about my salary openly at work, and it makes people really uncomfortable how much money I make at the education that I have. What I find is that how can we have a conversation about these things in our negotiation processes? And also, how can we get beyond what we have been penalized for to move forward. So currently I'm in a position to earn more, but it seems like they want to base it on my current work, which I was never appropriately compensated for in the first place.
So do you want me to answer that? You want to?
Yeah, no.
Okay. So number one, it's not your job to fix that. Like, I think that we have to remember there are these biases, especially for those who live at intersections. There's these biases. It is not your job to fix it. That said, that being aware of those intersections and using some of the tactics we've talked about around focusing on the collective, you know, trying to find organizations that value you for who you are and what you bring. Right, and this is, given the layers of identity that you're talking about, there's certainly going to be layers of bias, and they're going to be challenging, right? And yeah. And I think the you're going to really have to focus on where can I find an organization, where can I find a manager, where can I find the support that I need to get paid what I'm worth.
You know, I think when you were describing yourself, one word you left out was beautiful. And bold for asking the first question. And you know, I think another mistake that women make, I have made it, is sometimes you stay too long in an environment that's not right for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think we also have to acknowledge that the environments for people with layered identities that do feel safe are not many. And I think that it's a challenge. And I think it's a challenge that I know I and I'm my fellow panelists, I hope lots of people in the room are working toward changing.
Yeah. Like I said before, I mean, if you're not being treated fairly, not only if you're not being compensated, having a job offer to get compensated at that company, but, well, frankly, to leave and get paid what you actually are worth. And having, I think it is true that men are much more willing to leave. Women are like, oh, you know, next year I'll broach this subject again, or the next year. Sometimes it is.
But this is a cycle because of my identity is with me. This is a cycle that I have to, like, I have to start. I even told them in my interview, I was like, I'm tired of starting over every single time.
You know what? Then I would say respectfully, my friend, is do a much better job of research. If you find that you are in this situation, go out on Glassdoor, look and see how people are commenting about those companies.
Researching.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I'm a research assistant. Mm. But I think the thing that I want to make sure is clear that when I hear you say is like, it's not my fault.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
I have a manager right now who's the best I've had ever in my career, and I've been working for 15
years. Great.
So there comes like things that I'm working towards, but at the same time, like, I don't want to get paid on what I've been demanding. Mm. So it is.
So back here, we've got another question. Go ahead.
Hi. I probably come from a little bit different perspective in that I'm in public service. So whenever you're applying for a job, it's a very set range. You're applying for the job and you know that the pay is going to be this through this. You know what the benefits are. And I choose to be in public service. But I'm kind of interested if you have any kind of insight on a lot of times it's really hard to get raises or bonuses when you're in a certain position. It's actually having to transfer to those new positions and how to convince that you should be paid at the very top of that range. One, because like, I know I deserve it, but like the argument that is in my head is that that's going to be the real increase that I'm going to have for several years. You know, you may get $1,000, $2,000 a year, but that, you know, in a sense isn't that much. So how to kind of convince that you deserve the top of the range when you know that's in the budget. But I feel like sometimes there's, you know, a hesitancy to give the very top.
Well, I guess my question to you is, do you know what's involved to getting that top number? Do you feel that you're clear on what that top number? So if that's the case, then I think it's really just about articulating it and being very clear on, this is what I've done, this is what I know is being offered, this is what I feel I deserve, and that number, having that number and being very clear, once you say that number, zip your lips and sit there and just let them feel that awkward silence, but that breaks the energy up a little bit so that hopefully they're gonna be more willing to give in and at least negotiate to get you a little bit higher. That's what I think.
Perfect, we have another question right here.
Based on a recent restructuring, I have a new manager who has about 15 years less experience than I do. And I am performing quite well in a new role, so I'm curious if you have any tips and tricks on asking for what I believe I deserve, even if it might be higher than what my manager is making, or it might be at a level of performance that is higher than he is at now.
Have you had to face that, Meg?
Yes, actually. I work for people sometimes that are, and with people that are younger than I am. I think you've got to tie it back to the value of the position, the value of your unique experience. Those years should have value to the company and to your manager. And if your manager is younger, younger doesn't always mean less experience, but it might be, and you could be a real asset to that manager. So, you know, I think you made earlier comments about, you know, your manager is a person too. They have goals, they have a manager. And so how, in your unique position as a more senior person, can you help them be successful? And use that when you're building your case for making your compensation, you know, request.
Right. And don't use that information knowing they might be paid less.
Yeah, no.
But stop you from asking, right? That's someone else's job to tell you no based on that, not your own.
Right.
Perfect. Next question.
Hi, my name is Alana Morales. I'm going to give you all a background of my question just so y'all can better answer it, hopefully. And I wrote it down. So I put, I'm 22, and I'll be graduating with my master's when I'm 24. I'll have 6 years of working in my field part-time, but I won't have had any important positions due to me trying to focus on school and still trying to gain that experience. So my question is, how much should I let my age influence when I do, you know, end up getting out of school, what I should accept?
Not at all. So one of the things, in terms of, I do this thing, pitching yourself. Often when people are pitching themselves, they start off with basically going through their resume, their background. No, you want to start off with where you want to be. Right? And then you'll talk about your background and weave them together. Often people think of all the competencies they had versus just because you haven't, you know, raised money for a venture or you haven't worked in iBanking. You have skills that are transferable from what you're doing to that role. So you're going to talk about more of your skills versus reading off your resume. These skills, and you will find, and you will do research and know what skills are important for that role. And I'm sure you have all these skills, although you don't have past work experience, that are applicable and important for that new role. And that's what you highlight.
I would say you also have some time before you graduate. So make sure that the projects and the coursework and the volunteer work you're doing are helping build the case. Like, you should know now what a future employer is looking for in terms of experience. And so you've got time to prepare, again, another theme, and just be very prescriptive about what you do to kind of set you up for success in your interviews. Yeah. It doesn't have to be paid experience to be valuable experience.
A tip I have for you is actually, because you have that time, do your research online, go on Indeed, go on whatever job board sites, find the job descriptions for the title that you're wanting to go after, and then really do like a crazy detailed highlight of the keywords in
Absolutely.
Those job descriptions. Find out, okay, they're looking for research skills, and I see this amongst 5, 6, 7 different job descriptions. So that's something I'm definitely gonna have to prove in the interview that I have this skill. So tie it back to your master's, tie it back to your undergrad, whatever it is, and talk about projects and achievements from that perspective and say, because I have these research skills as proven and as discussed, I know that I can bring that here as well.
Well, we could have a whole session on how to get found on LinkedIn, but to your point on using those keywords, make sure you put those keywords on your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah,
absolutely, that's fair.
Great question. Next resume. Over here.
Hi there. Thank you for your presentation. My name is Sally, and earlier you mentioned that there are some other things you can negotiate for beyond salary. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit more about negotiating for like things like PTO and other benefits and your own experiences.
I would say first, decide what's important to you. You know, and if it's in addition to salary, if it's PTO or flexible work location, a signing bonus, you know, do your research, see what's typical, figure out what's right for you, and then kind of have that core set going in.
Yeah,
and I would and lay it out, lay it all out.
Yeah, and I would also say do research, talk to people who work at the company,
find out what is flexible and what's not. Some companies don't have any flexibility around PTO. Some don't have any flexibility around education reimbursement. Find out what is negotiable so that you can go in when you know what's important to you. And we recently had a guest on the podcast who said she knows she gets paid less than her colleagues because she negotiated for a lot of time off. And that was really important to her. And she went into this recent job knowing that that was the thing that was most important to her. So you also want to research based on your companies where you want to apply based on what's important to you as well.
And some company websites will post their benefits. Others you can find in, you know, social forums.
Yep. I think also don't overwhelm them with, okay, let me go through the list of 10 things that I want to negotiate. I think you really have to prioritize.
That's fair.
I can't really give a number, but I'd almost say, you know, 2-3 really for sure things that you want to get out of that offer. Focus on those.
And then have backup. So if there's no's on those, you have backup things you want as well, right?
Exactly. Great. We probably have time for one more question real quick.
Hi. So in some of my research in learning about pay inequality and what you can do to combat that, I've also found that there's some research that shows that women's salaries tend to kind of plateau a little bit at age 30, where they stop growing as quickly as men's do at that point and can sometimes hit like a peak at 39. And I was wondering if you found that to be true in your experience and if there's any additional things that we can do to combat that as we get older.
So, yeah, the research, and a lot of people say that why that is, and that's probably popular press combining a lot of past research, don't put numbers on it, but they say around when women start having kids, right? This is part of the issue. And sometimes people say part of the rationale for why there is this gender gap. Someone asked me this the other day on a completely different panel. So if women are trying to get back, or that is their intention to get back into the workforce, it's actually one of the things we talked about earlier. It is that you need to, we tell people, you still need to keep your skills sharp. So maybe you do nonprofit, or so constantly still working on those skills that you have been using, even though you've had some time off or away from the company, if that is your intention to go back in. But companies are becoming much smarter, thank goodness. They recognize that women who've taken maternity, there are all these amazing, smart women that they can, given that there's this war on talent, that they can bring in. So organizations now are actually, for people who have had extended time off, having these almost internships and bringing them up at higher levels. So that's also hopefully going to help impact that dip that you've been talking about in terms of research.
Yeah, I think what you'll look for, you'll find. So if you go after the organizations that are more progressive, you know, and really set that standard for yourself. Don't just accept a job because of you need that job, but really set that standard and then go after it. I think you'll be able to find what it is that you're looking for in the range of what you're looking for.
And so Amy gave you guys some homework, but I'll give you a challenge. At some point, you guys will be the manager. And remember what it feels like to be the candidate, or remember what it feels like to be the person that's asking for a promotion, and pay it forward. Yep. So remember it when you're in that position.
Great homework.
Yep, perfect. This was a fantastic panel. Great discussion.
Great.
Thank you for the questions. Please go down. Thank you. Amy on the panel has a book signing right now, as do a lot of other authors. So we hope to see you downstairs with Amy at the book signing. Otherwise, thank you.